Well, it's great to see all of you here this morning. Thanks so much for coming out and being a part of our day. You know, 2 weeks from tonight, there's a conglomerate of churches in Auburn getting together. We've done this in the past. It's called Ignite the Foothills. And on Sunday night, the 14th, down at the amphitheater behind the library right on Nevada Street, there's just going to be a bunch of Christian churches coming together to have some music, some prayer time together. It's a great place for us as a congregation to join together with other Christian congregations in our community and to be a part of what God is doing in the foothills. You know, we're just one of many great churches in the foothills, and we come together once a year or once every other year just to sing together, to have some prayers said on behalf of the foothills. And so in each exit, there's a wall, and on the wall, there are some of these invitations to Ignite Foothills. And so we want to encourage you to grab one and hand it out to a friend. But it's 2 weeks from tonight. Also, as summer is entering, as we're entering into the summer season, our children's program is giving a rest to many of our teachers. And so we're going to recruit some folks to be on the children's team for this summer. And if you are interested in that, maybe there's 12 weeks of summer. Perhaps you and your wife would like to do 6 weeks. Perhaps you and your son or your daughter would like to do 6 weeks. Both service times are available, and there's a variety of opportunities. We'll give you the curriculum. You're with those kids for about an hour. And let me promise you, you will never be the same after being with those kids out there for an hour. And they'll never be the same as well. Wasn't that great to see the children in baptism today? That was terrific. You know, our children's department has been putting on a class for several weeks now, and these children have been walking through what does baptism mean, what is it all about, and so they've done a terrific job there. So what a privilege to witness that this morning. All right, well, let's grab our Bibles if you have them with you, and we're going to be in the book of Acts. There's a history book in your Bible called the Book of Acts, or the Acts of the Apostles, and we've been walking through this book for the last several months, and today we're in chapter 18. Chapter 18. Pastor Greg shared last Sunday, and he did a terrific job reminding us that God will provide what you need when you need it. I don't know about you, but that really resonates with me. It's a wonderful idea in and of itself that God provides, that our God is a personal God. He's not out there some distant place, doesn't care about you, doesn't know about you. He provides for you. He provides what you need. Sometimes he doesn't always provide what I want. How many times have you prayed for something and you haven't got it, and years later you look back and go, that's probably a good thing that I never received that $100 million lottery ticket, you know? He gives us what we need, and then lastly, he gives it to us when we need it. Maybe you're here this morning and you're looking for God to provide you with something. And we're going to wait for God to provide it when you need it most. God reminded us through the Apostle Paul last week. Greg talked about how God provided Paul, who was the team leader on this journey, all that he needed. He brought him some friends. When he really needed friends, he brought him Priscilla and Aquila. When he needed old friends to come back into his life, then Titus and Silas came. And then when God allowed Paul to have really a time of rest, in chapter 18 it says that God told Paul, Paul, you've been in a lot of trouble in a lot of cities, but in this city, the city of Corinth, you're going to find peace. You're going to find rest. Because that's what he really needed. We also saw from Greg last week that in the city of Corinth, when there was a stirring up because of Christianity, that the city officials decided to decline on taking any action. In some of the other cities that Paul had been in, it wasn't so. But in this city, the leadership said, you know what, we're just going to let you deal with this yourself. And so there was no great commotion in the city of Corinth. God continued to provide what Paul needed when he needed it. When he needed it. Well, this morning we're in chapter 18, verse 18, and we're going to be talking just for a minute about how to tell God thank you. You know, I'm sure if we were able to take pen and a paper, we would be able to come up with a list of all of the things that we're grateful for in our life. It's a wonderful exercise to make a list of all of the thank yous to God. And this morning, we're going to see a very unusual and maybe very practical way for us to say thank you to God for the things that he has done in your life. In chapter 18 of the book of Acts, and we're in verse 18, there's a very interesting statement. It says in verse 18, Paul, having remained many days longer, talking about in the city of Corinth, he took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for where? Where was he going? Syria. Now, this is a map of Paul. He's the team leader. It's called the Second Missionary Journey. It's a 9-city tour, and it started over here in Israel, in the city, or just above Israel, in the city of Antioch. And over the last couple of months, we have followed their journey west as they've come to Troas, and they crossed over into Europe, and they've gone through several of these cities, Berea, down to Athens. And last week, Greg told us about what took place in the city of Corinth. But now the journey's over. They feel like they've done enough, and they're going to head home. And so it says that they have decided in Corinth that they were going to head back to Syria, where the city of Antioch is located. And so they're going to get on a ship. They're going to come to the city of Ephesus. They're going to cross the sea down to Caesarea, go to Jerusalem just for a little bit, and then head back up to Antioch. And today, we're kind of wrapping up this 3-year tour that Paul and his team have been engaged in. And there's been a lot of good things that have happened. There's been a lot of difficult things that have happened to them. And Paul now is wrapping up. He said, it's time to go home. I've done my tour. I'm going to head back to the region of Syria so that I can head to Antioch. But in verse 18, it has this crazy sentence. It says, when he put out to sea at Syria, with him were Priscilla and Aquila. Now look at the last sentence of verse 18. In Cenchrea, he had his what? He got a haircut. I don't know about you, but that's kind of unusual, right? I mean, this guy is this big wig missionary. He's had this team for 3 years. They finished the tour. They're on their way home. And when he stops at the port city, which was about 5 or 6 miles from Corinth, this place called Cenchrea, he decides, I'm going to go to the beauty shop on my way out. Why would we be told about his haircut? Well, it says in verse 18 there that he got his hair cut because he was keeping a vow. He was keeping a vow. Now, a vow is like a commitment, but it's kind of a serious commitment. We live our lives by a series of commitments. When you agree to take that cell phone home from the store, you sign a contract that you're going to pay a certain amount every month. And it's usually a 2-year contract. You are making a vow. You're making a commitment that you're going to pay that cell phone bill for 2 years. When you sign your mortgage agreement, you agree. You commit. I'm going to pay the bank all these hundreds of thousands of dollars of interest, and then they'll let me have my house. When you sign your rental agreement, when you sign up your kids for school, we are filled in our lives with commitments that we make a pledge to keep. Well, a vow is similar, but typically a vow is a personal pledge to God. It's a sacred pledge. It's not necessarily a pledge about finances. It's not necessarily a pledge about a particular issue in my life. It's a pledge or a promise that I'm making to God. And apparently, when Paul was in the city of Corinth, and he had 18 years, verse 11 says he spent 18 months, not 18 years, he had 18 months of wonderful, sweet time of work and help among the people in Corinth. And at the end of that 18 months, he decides to take this vow, and part of this vow was to get his hair cut. And so I wanted to take a few minutes this morning and explain to us, what is this vow that he took? As he gets ready to take off from Cenchrea, this little port city, he's heading back home to Antioch. It says he got his hair cut because he was keeping a vow. Now, if you have your finger there in chapter 18 of Acts, we can go all the way back to the 4th book of the Bible, because we understand the vow that Paul was taking at this particular time is told to us in the book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 6. And it's called the Nazarite vow. Turn to your neighbor and say, Nazarite vow. It sounds a little bit like this city of Nazareth, which is a famous city in the Bible, but it's got nothing to do with that city. We know that Jesus came from the city of Nazareth, and so sometimes we think, well, Nazarite must have something to do with Jesus. Didn't have anything to do with Jesus. This is an old ancient vow that the people of Israel would take. It would last maybe 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Some scholars say it was as short as 8 days, but you're going to take a vow for 30, 60, or 90 days. And here's what it says. Numbers chapter 6 and verse 2, it simply says, "Speak to the sons of Israel," this is God talking, "and say to them, when a man or a woman," so women can make this vow, "make a special vow, the vow of a Nazarite, to dedicate himself to the Lord." Apparently, the purpose of this vow was to get closer to God. It was to press in to have a closer relationship with God. And so you would do certain things during this time of your vow that helped you to get closer to God. And you would decide personally, am I going to do this for 30 days? Am I going to do this for 60 days? Am I going to do it for 90 days? The duration of the vow was up to you. But here are the three main components. It says in Numbers chapter 6, verse 3, "He shall abstain from wine and strong drink. He shall drink no vinegar." Well, that wouldn't be a hard vow to keep, would it? "Made from wine or strong drink, nor shall he drink any grape juice or eat flesh or dried grapes. All the days of his separation," his vow, "he shall not eat anything that is produced by the grapevine, from the seeds even to the skin of the grape." There was something about the grape, something about wine, that if you were going to take the Nazarite vow, you would fast from that. Now, if we understand the ancient world, we understand that wine in the ancient world symbolized feasting and festivities and the good life. And so part of what we understand about this Nazarite vow is that you would fast from festivals. You would take something in your life that symbolizes the good life to you that God has given to you, symbolizes the festivals, symbolizes the feasting time, and you would say, "God, for the next 30 days, I know I get a lot of joy in life from this particular issue, and I'm going to fast from that issue, or I'm going to abstain from partaking in that particular element during my time of fast, during my vow." In the ancient world, there was nothing better than coming in from the field or from the farm, or from the vineyard, sitting down with your family, having a wonderful meal, and a nice glass of wine. And when you finished your meal, you would say, "Life is what? It's good." Whenever they had a wedding or they had a festival, wine would be included. So it's not that there's something necessarily wrong with wine or grapes per se, but it has this idea that wine and grapes are associated with festivals and feasting and the good life. And so God tells the people of Israel, "I want to be your joy for 30 days. I want to be what makes you really satisfied. I want to be that symbol of the good life for the next 60 days. And so I want you to refrain. I want you to fast from whatever symbol would represent the good life to you, the feasting, the festivals. And I want to become your joy for 30 days. Now, if we fast forward to today, what is the symbol in your life or in my life that represents the good life? What is it that you have, or when you sit down in the evening, you go, "Wow, life is good because I get to enjoy what?" It could be a drink. It could be food. It could be a program. It could be an exercise. It could be something that you do. All of us, if we sit back and say, "What is the symbol in my life of the joy of my life? What is the symbol of my life of the feasting of my life? If I could really enjoy a good evening, I would want it to include blank." And then that would be your symbol of the feasting, of the festivals in your life. I asked Ruth the other day, what would be the example, what would be the symbol of fast, of feasting in my life, Ruth? And she said, well, it'd be sports. And I thought, well, if I took a Nazarite vow, I would have to give up sports for 30 days. And so I said, well, I'll be glad to give up football for 30 days right now, because football starts in September, right? Okay. But all of us have something in our life that we enjoy to, I don't want to use this word out of context, but to, when we party in life, when we feast in life, there are certain things we enjoy to be part of that festival, that enjoyment. And part of the Nazarite vow is to say, you know, for the next 8 days or 30 or 60 or 90 days, I'm gonna refrain from enjoying that, because I want to press into God and I want Him to be the main source of my joy this time. That's the first part of the Nazarite vow. In Numbers chapter 6, it goes on to say that verse 5, all the days of his vow of separation, no razor shall pass over his head. He shall be holy until the days are fulfilled for which he has separated himself to the Lord. He shall let the locks of his hair on his head grow long. See, in the ancient world, the Jewish people kept very short haircuts, especially the men. They kept very short haircuts. And so what this is a symbol of is we are paying inattention, okay, self-imposed inattention to our personal beauty. So a Jewish man would allow his hair to grow long. He's going to take these 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, and he's not going to pay a lot of attention to his personal beauty. Why? Because he wants to focus on the beauty of God. He's not going to make this time a vow about himself. He's going to make it about God. It doesn't mean he doesn't take a bath. It doesn't mean that she doesn't put makeup on. It doesn't mean that you completely abstain from any beauty. It's just not the focus of your life for these next 60 days. Or 30 days. Now, looking around at you this morning, apparently many of you are taking this vow already, right? Turn to your neighbor and say, are you taking this vow right now? See, what is it that, as a person, when you think of your personal hygiene and beauty, what is it that you enjoy about making yourself beautiful? Is it the clothes you buy? Do you enjoy going to the beauty salon? Do you enjoy? And Paul is just taking this vow, and he says, you know, for the next designated time period, I'm not going to spend a lot of attention on my personal beauty, because I want to focus for the next whatever days on God. And I don't want this time to be about me. I want it to be about Him. And so they wouldn't shave their heads. They would let their hair grow long. And then at the end of the vow, they would then shave their heads, the guys would. And they would take a little bag and they would put the hair in the bag, and they would take that bag to the temple, and they would perform this little ritual that burned the hair up, and boom, my vow was complete. It was done. So when Paul leaves Corinth, before he gets on the boat in little Sancria, and it says that he shaved his head because he was keeping a vow, it tells us he's coming to the end of his vow. He shaved his head. And now he has his hair in a little bag in his pouch. And he's got to get to Jerusalem so that he can do this little ceremony to finish the vow. Paul wants to finish it, because he's made a vow to God, and he takes his vows to God seriously. And if we read through the Bible about vows, we know that people that make a vow to God need to take it seriously, because God takes it seriously. It tells us over and over again in the Bible, when we speak a vow to God, God hears it, and we better fulfill it. And so Paul now is completing his vow, and he's rushing off to Jerusalem so that he could perform this little ceremony so that he can finish his vow that he's pledged to God. The second part is you have an inattention toward personal beauty. And then back here, finally, in Numbers chapter 6, it says in verse 6, all the days of his separation, that's all the days that you're taking this vow, to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead person. In the ancient culture, when you were around a dead body, whether it be a person or an animal, that was considered unclean. Because in the ancient world, they had some very unusual and very specific requirements. And a lot of them had to do with your spiritual life. Some of them had to do with just simple health issues. But in the Old Testament, when a dead body was considered unclean. And so if you were to touch a dead body or you were to move a dead body, you had to do a little ritual to make yourself clean again. But during this time of a vow, it clearly says, you're not to go near a dead body. And the idea is because you become unclean. So during the 30 days, if you had a rat in the house, you'd have to get your wife to kill it and take it out. If there was a cow that died in the pasture, you'd have to get your neighbors to come and get the cow out of the pasture because you're taking a vow right now and you don't want to touch a dead body. If your friend happened to die and there was a funeral procession, you would not, unfortunately, join in that procession because you were in this period of taking a vow to God. If we fast forward this idea to today, it would simply say, what is it that I struggle with in my life that God would not want in my life? Something that's kind of unclean, maybe some thoughts or attitudes or actions that God would want me to avoid and abstain from, primarily, specifically and emphatically when I'm taking this Nazirite vow. Perhaps it's a thought life issue. Perhaps it's something that I see that I know God doesn't want me to look at. Perhaps it's something I'm listening to. Perhaps it's an attitude in my heart of anger or unforgiveness. Or perhaps it's an action that I'm doing. I'm going to this place or I'm engaged in this activity. I know God doesn't want me to do it. It's sinful. And so during this time of the Nazirite vow, I'm going to be very careful to not engage in anything unclean. So as Paul was in Corinth, he participated in these three elements. He said, you know what? I'm not going to drink anything from the grapevine, whether it's juice or raisins or wine, because I want God to be my joy. I'm not going to pay a lot of attention to my personal beauty, so I'm not going to cut my hair, because I want this time to be about God, not about me. And I'm going to abstain and avoid anything that is unclean because God is holy. And if I want to press into him in relationship, I've got to make sure because he's holy, I don't engage in unholy things. And this is what's called the Nazirite vow. This is what Paul was finishing in the city of Corinth as he was heading home. Now, there's a book that the Jewish people used to use, and it was called the Mishnah. And the Mishnah gave some practical ways of how to fulfill the Nazirite vow. Because what you were really trying to accomplish, as I said, was you're trying to get closer to God. You're not just doing these three things because, oh, maybe God would be happier with me. You're not doing these three things because other people are doing them. You're doing them because there's something inside of you that wants to get closer to God. And you realize that for whatever reason, you're not as close to God as you want to be or as you desire to be. And the normal routine of my life isn't getting me closer to God. So I'm going to engage in something unusual to help me press into God. I'm going to take these next 30 days and I'm going to read my Bible more than I usually do. I'm going to take a certain section of the Bible and I'm just going to read it slowly, and I'm going to think about it, and I'm going to ask God to show me if there's ways that this Bible can help me in my life. I'm going to take a piece of paper, and I'm going to write out my prayer request, and I'm just going to spend more time than usual praying to God because I feel like he's asking me to press in closer to him. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever had a season in your life when you felt, you know what, I just think that God wants me to be closer to him. He wants me to be nearer to him. He wants me to talk to him more than I do. He wants me to think about him more than I do. Well, they felt that way in the ancient world. And when they felt that way, they would participate in a vow. They would participate in the Nazirite vow so that they could press into God closer. And you know, it's so interesting that Paul is not only a Jew, but Paul is a Christian. And as a Christian, he participates in this vow. which tells us today that we should feel free to do the Nazirite vow. That we could pick 8 days or 30 days or 60 days or even 90 days and say, God, during this summer, I want to get closer to you. I want to press into you. So we could say, you know what, this summer, school is out. Things have slowed down. I'm going to spend more time with God than I normally do. I want to press into him. And so I'm going to make a vow. It's so interesting, though, how we avoid vows, don't we? I avoid commitments. Do you do that? I'm glad you don't. Okay, I do that sometimes. But this is a wonderful spiritual exercise to get closer to God. Now, the Mishnah told us, the Mishnah is a book that the Jewish people used to use that explains how to do their rituals. And in the Mishnah book, when it talked about the Nazirite vow, it said that you could only complete the vow at the temple. Now, when Paul took this vow and when Paul exercised this vow, where was he at? He was in the city of what? Corinth, right? He's outside of Israel. And so now he knows that if I'm going to fulfill and finish this vow, I've got to get to Jerusalem. I've got to get to the temple. And so now he has his head shaved. He has a little pouch full of his hair clippings. And he's 1,500 miles away from Jerusalem. But he's got to get there as soon as he can so that he can finish his vow. Because the mission of the book says you have to finish it in the temple in Jerusalem. But it also tells us that you took this vow for one of three reasons. You were pressing into God. You were trying to get closer to God, maybe because of purification. That ancient people sometimes found themselves wandering away from God. They felt like, you know, the prodigal son. They had made choices in their life that were contrary to God's plan for their life. The agenda of their life was what they ran their life by. And they were engaged in some unholy, maybe some immoral things. And then they were trying to get back to God. They were trying to restore a relationship with him. And so they would go through this ritual, this Nazirite vow, so that they could purify themselves. Because they felt like their life had been engaged in unclean things. So one of the reasons you took the Nazirite vow was to clean up your life. You would make this promise to God, okay, God, for the next 30 days, I'm going to abstain from wine. I'm going to not pay much attention to my physical beauty. I'm going to abstain from these unclean things so that I can be closer to you. So that I can be closer to you. Because I feel like I've wandered away from you. And maybe, you know, this morning you felt like you've kind of wandered away from God a little bit. And this is a wonderful exercise to draw close to him. Now, it doesn't really seem like Paul needed a time of purification because we know for 18 months he's been in Corinth and everything has been going really well. There's no indication in his life that he has slipped off God's path and been engaged in something inappropriate. So most likely Paul was not taking this particular vow because of the desire of purification. The second reason is for strength. If you were going through a really tough time in your life and you really needed God's strength, one of the ways to press into God, to draw his strength, is through the Nazirite vow. Because see, people in the ancient world struggled in their relationships. They struggled with health issues. They struggled with financial issues. They struggled with vocational issues, just like we do today. And there were times in the ancient world where people experienced a point in their life where they just can't do it anymore. I just can't take it anymore. I'm going through a low spot, and God, I need your strength. And so one of the ways, one of the mechanisms to draw close to God, to draw his strength, is to go through the Nazirite vow. Now, again, if we fast forward to today, how many of us have gone through or are going through a dark time? How many of us are struggling with a relational issue or a vocational issue or a financial issue or a physical issue? And you're at the point where you say, God, I just don't know how much more I can do. I'm losing my strength. One of the ways we can draw close to God to gain his strength is by doing the Nazirite vow. But again, Paul in Corinth doesn't seem to be in a disastrous situation. He's not being persecuted. He doesn't tell us that he's sick. He doesn't tell us that there's a lot of opposition. There were in other towns, but not this town. He's actually experiencing a very sweet spot in ministry. He's enjoyed these last 18 months because the 18 months before that, it was a lot of ridicule and persecution. But since he arrived in Corinth and God brought him some friends and God told him this is going to be a season of peace in your life, he's had a very good journey in Corinth. So it doesn't really seem like Paul would take the Nazirite vow because he needed more strength from God. So that leaves us with the third one, a vow of gratitude. Paul says, you know what, God, I just want to say thank you for these last 18 months. I've had a lot of difficulties on the first missionary journey. I've had a lot of difficulties on the second missionary journey. And now as I'm beginning to head home, as I'm beginning to wrap up this whole journey, I just want to have a season where I go out of my way and maybe even in an extreme manner say thank you for what you've done in my life. Because it really blesses God's heart when I set aside a symbol of my festivities and say, God, I want you to be my joy. That's a great way to say thank you to God. A great way to say thank you to God is to abstain from some unclean thing in my life and live holy because he's holy. And so when I live holy and I do it to reflect his holiness, and I say, God, thank you that you're holy. I'm so grateful that I'm going to live holy like you are holy. God, thank you that you are beautiful. I am going to celebrate who you are by not paying much attention to my own physical beauty, because I want these next 60 or 30 days to be about who you are. And I just want to say thank you. So I'm going to set my own personal life aside and I'm going to focus on your beauty, and you are the joy and you are holy. And I just want to say thank you. And do it for 8 days or for 30 days or for 60 days or for 90 days. I think in Paul's place in Corinth right now, he's not taken the Nazirite vow because he needs purification. He's not taken the Nazirite vow because he needs strength for the future. If he needed strength for the future, he would have finished the Nazirite vow in Jerusalem and shaved his head there. I think he's just saying, God, I've been through a lot the last 10 years of my life, but these last 18 months have been really sweet. And so I'm going to take 30 days and I'm going to separate myself and make a vow to you, God, every day for 30 days. I'm going to abstain from this because I want you to be my joy. For 30 days, I'm going to keep my life clean from this because I want to say thank you. And God, I'm not going to go shopping for clothes. I'm not going to make myself the issue because I want you to be the issue. And I do all of this, God, just to say thank you. Isn't that incredible? I don't know about you, but when I want to say thanks to God, it's usually like, thank you, Lord, what's next? And I spend a lot more time talking to God about the future than thanking him for the past. Are you like that? Because I pray and pray and pray, and when God does it, I say, thank you, Lord, but now I still got five more things I need. And so I say shoot up a quick thank you to the Lord for what he's done, and then I move on to what's needed next. And this is a beautiful picture of how we can say, you know what, God, you've really have brought me through some stuff. And these last few months have really been a time of peace. And I just want to say thanks. And so I'm going to commit myself to a vow. See, maybe you're here this morning and you're thinking, I need purification. I want to get closer to God. Let me encourage you to think of the Nazirite vow. That for the next 75 years, you're just going to take this vow, right? It's interesting, there are three people in the Bible that were dedicated to the Nazirite vow for their whole life. Remember those three people? Samson in the Old Testament. Samuel's mother, who couldn't have kids, prayed to God and said, God, if you give me a child, I will dedicate his whole life to you. And when Samuel was born, she put him under the Nazirite vow for his whole life. And then in the New Testament, there's John the Baptist. The reason he had long hair, is because he was under the Nazirite vow, and you don't shave your head. His whole life was dedicated to God. But it's interesting, God's not asking for this for us for our whole life, but how about the next 8 days? How about the next 30 days? Showing gratitude or looking for his strength. Verse 19, 21, let's just read it quickly. We're back in Acts chapter 18 again. We'll wrap up this journey with a couple of thoughts. Chapter 18, verse 19, Paul stops in Ephesus. They came to Ephesus and he left them there, talking about Aquila and Priscilla. Now he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. Remember that word reason there means to have a dialogue. That wherever Paul went, he just wanted to have a dialogue about Jesus. He wasn't interested in preaching at people. He wasn't interested in bashing them over the head with the Bible. He was interested, though, in making Jesus famous by having talks with people about Jesus. A great example for us. It says in verse 20, when they asked him to stay for a longer time, he did not consent. That's interesting, because he just spent 18 months in Corinth. He goes to Ephesus just for a day or two, and then when they ask him to stay, he says, I can't stay. Because in verse 21, it says, but taking leave of them, I will return to you if God wills. And he set sail from Ephesus. Paul has a dialogue in the synagogue, and then he leaves Aquila and Priscilla there. But you notice why he left so quickly? Remember now why? Because he has that pouch of hair in his pocket. And he wants to get to Jerusalem so that he can finish the vow. So even though he had an opportunity in Ephesus, he said, guys, I can't stay because my vow to God is more important than my ministry to you. And he says, I can't stay. But if the Lord opens the door, I'm going to come back. And then in verse 22, we wrap this up. It says that he landed in Caesarea, which is now back in the Holy Land. And it says in verse 22, he went up and greeted the church and then went down to Antioch. Now, when he says the words in this verse, up and down, he's not talking about directions on a map. You know, when we talk about where are you going, we usually say, oh, I'm going to Oregon. Oh, yeah? I'm going up there to visit a friend. When you say, hey, I'm going up to Oregon, what are you talking about? I'm going what? North. Okay? When I'm going to SoCal to see my kids, I'm going to go down to SoCal. I'm going to go what? South. Okay? But this last weekend, we were able to get away to go to Tahoe, to go to the mountains. When you say, well, when you go to the mountains, where do you go? You go what? Up to the mountains. So you're not talking about direction, because you could go east to Lake Tahoe. You could go northeast to Lake Tahoe. You're talking about elevation. We go up to the mountains. Or when you go surfing at the beach, where do you go? You go down to the beach. You're not talking about a direction. You're talking about an elevation. Well, we know that Jerusalem was sitting on the top of a mountain. So wherever you went from Caesarea to Jerusalem, you went up in elevation, just like up to the mountains. So he's not saying that from Caesarea he went north. He's saying he went up in elevation, and we know up in elevation to Jerusalem. Why was he going to Jerusalem? Because he wanted to complete his vow and to say hi to the congregation there. It's been 3 years since he saw his brothers and sisters in the Lord in Jerusalem. So he goes up to Jerusalem, and then he goes down to Antioch. He's not going south to Antioch. Antioch is north, but he's going down there because he has to come down out of the heights of Jerusalem. And he's going to Antioch because that is where he started, and he's going there to report to the congregation how the last 3 years went, and he's going to get some rest. He's going to get some rest. And thus completes the three-year, nine-city journey of making Jesus famous. We call it Paul's second missionary journey. And then next chapter, we'll see how he starts his third. You know, if you're here this morning and you're going through a season where you feel like you've walked away from God or you don't know God and you want to get to know him closer, perhaps the Nazarite vow is a way to do it. You can say, you know what, God, I want to get closer to you, and I've been involved in some things that are keeping me from you. So I'm going to set those things aside for the next 30 days and draw close to you. Perhaps you're here and you've been going through some tough stuff. And you just say, God, I need your strength. And so you're going to set aside some things. You're going to have God become your joy. You're going to spend more time with him than you normally do because, God, I need your strength. Or perhaps here this morning, you're in a sweet spot. God has been good to you these last months. You feel like you're riding high. Everything is falling your way. The wind's at your back. It's a great time to say, okay, God, I'm going to press into you, not to get something from you, but to give you my gratitude, to give you my praise. You know, summer's here. School's out. Our church programs slow down. It's a great time to consider the Nazarite vow as a way to draw closer to God on your own. Let me encourage you to think about that and pray about that. Let's stand together and pray. Dear God in heaven, thank you for instituting this practice of the Nazarite vow. It's such an ancient ritual, but Lord, it's so practical for us today. And Paul, as a Jew and as a Christian, practiced the Nazarite vow. Lord, some of us here this morning need your forgiveness. We want to draw close to you, and we know that we've been walking away. Some of us here don't know you, but you've been knocking on the door of our heart. So, Lord, may you use Paul's experience to apply to our life so that we can draw close to you. Lord, you desire for us to walk holy before you. You desire for us to make you our joy, our primary joy in life. Lord, some of us here are really walking through the valley. We have things that are going on that are way beyond our control, and they're difficult and painful and hurtful and sorrowful. And so, Lord, we need your strength. Thank you that you describe yourself as a God of strength and comfort. But Lord, the normal routine with you is not working. We need to press in deeper. We need to draw from you as never before. So Lord, maybe this Nazarite vow, this specified time of pressing into you is what you're going to ask us and call us to do. But Lord, thank you for those of us that are here today in the good time of life, in a sweet season. It's not going to always last. It hasn't always been here, but for some reason, right now we're being showered with your blessings. Help us not to take that for granted. Help us to truly express our thanksgiving and gratitude. And maybe we can do it in an extreme way, as Paul did here in Corinth. Thank you that you love us so much. In Jesus' name.